Hey ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The more MQLs, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. One of my favorite conversations I've ever had on There Are No Girls on the Internet is with a writer who was targeted and harassed online about how she continues to stay safe while doing visible work on the internet. Without missing a beat, she said, "Anybody worried about online harassment should sign up for Delete Me." I signed up for Delete Me right then and there, and I personally recommend it to anyone. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and use promo code NOGIRLS at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and enter code NOGIRLS at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/nogirls, code NOGIRLS.
She definitely committed so many offenses that harmed real life people. So I think to flatten something like that into this like very frivolous, like fun, glossy slog of a TV show, full stop, I don't know, dot, dot, dot.
There Are No Girls on the Internet is a production of iHeartRadio and Unbossed Creative. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is There Are No Girls on the Internet. We spend a lot of time on this show talking about lies and the internet. And I have to say that part of the reason why I personally work on disinformation issues is because of my intense fascination in things that are not true. How do lies function? Why do we believe them? Who profits off of them? And how do they shape our world? So in 2018, when the story first broke about the fake German heiress Anna Delvey, I was, of course, fascinated. Anna, real name Anna Sorokin, had been scamming investors, hotels, even her own friends, in pursuit of opening an art foundation and private club called the Anna Delvey Foundation. The club, like the millions of dollars of family money that Anna said that she was supposedly worth, never materialized. Anna's former friend, Rachel Deloach Williams, first introduced the world to Anna after she wrote about their disastrous trip to Marrakesh. Anna initially agreed to pay for the trip, but never managed to put down a working credit card at the pricey villa where they were staying. When hotel staff insisted that somebody put down a functioning credit card, Rachel was pressured into putting the cost of the entire trip, $62,000, more than a year of her salary, on her work and personal credit cards. Now, Anna assured her that she would wire her the money to pay her back, but she never did. In the end, Rachel helped lead police to Anna's whereabouts, which led to Anna's arrest and conviction for one count of attempted grand larceny, three counts of grand larceny, and four counts of theft of services related to her various scams. But she was found not guilty of the $62,000 Rachel was out for the trip. Last month, Netflix released Inventing Anna, a fictionalized, very sympathetic retelling of her con, based on the reporting of Jessica Pressler at New York Magazine. Anna's crimes were so flashy and outlandish, it was hard not to pay attention. And that, Rachel says, is kind of part of the scam. In her book, My Friend Anna, Rachel writes, "I have come to understand that your attention is an investment. Giving someone your attention is the act of being influenced, whether or not you're aware of it in the moment. And especially in this age of constant simulation, with endless people and stories competing for your clicks, likes, follows, and time, your attention has value. It has power. It's worth something. It can even put money in someone's pocket. Be careful where you spend it and understand the cost." I spoke to Rachel about why our current digital media landscape is presenting a golden age for scammers and what that means for all of us. And just one quick note, we were recording on a noisy day in Brooklyn, so the audio quality might not be what you're used to from this podcast. Why do you think this is? Why do you think we're in this era where people cannot get enough of people who lie and scam and steal and cheat others?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I've certainly asked myself the same one, but I think I have a kind of unique vantage point in that I lived through a con firsthand, and I know that's sort of how it works. It's sort of this larger than life flashy illusion, like a magic trick that is meant to grab your attention so that while you're busy sort of puzzling over it, you know, whatever sort of business is going on behind the scenes can happen without too much focus or analysis, I suppose. So I think there's a fascination with, you know, tricksters, and with it is in many ways like watching a magician at work, and so that people wanna watch as a voyeur to understand where the sleight of hand occurred, how someone fell for it, and you know, especially in this age where it is kind of hard with the internet and with all of these different media forms coming at us to discern between fact and fiction, to get to watch something in an arena that seems pretty low stakes because it's billed as entertainment. I think it people enjoy, maybe they don't think about it that hard, but they enjoy getting to see something that straddles that divide on purpose.
In talking about the Netflix show Inventing Anna, you write really compellingly about this, that one of the reasons why the show is kind of dangerous is that it does sort of aim to straddle that line. Each episode starts with, "This is a completely true story, except for the things that are fictionalized." And I think as a viewer, you might not really know that your act, it can be used as a way to heavily, deeply fictionalize something that people actually experience. And I think that the purposeful straddling of that line of fact and fiction and kind of blending them can be a little bit dangerous because the stakes do feel low. It just feels like entertainment.
Exactly. I mean, you've said it in some ways better than I could say it myself, but that's exactly right. And it's kind of disheartening. I mean, I appreciate that you're speaking up about this too, and other people, you know, are certainly paying attention now. But I think part of the reason I chose to continue talking about this, which, you know, this story, which is well and truly behind me, and I would love to move on from and not be discussing today. But the reason I'm speaking up is because I see something happening that sets a precedent that I do think is troubling, that I do think is dangerous. And I do think it requires viewers to ask questions, probably more so than we can expect a media company who profits from it to do. But the Netflix show Inventing Anna does do this thing where it sticks that label up as a disclaimer, but it blends factual information with things that are completely made up, as it says it does, but it makes viewers go online, look things up, see that some things are true. And then that creates this foundation of credibility that allows them to think, well, if this is true, I believe the narrative that they've woven with, this big, big budget production and all this like whistles and bells, and like how compelling is that? Storytelling is really powerful, and I think that's why it requires a level of responsibility. I think people are apt to believe things that they watch in stories or that they connect to in terms of a narrative more than sometimes dry facts that they hear on the news.
Yeah, you know, you describe this in your book in talking about the way that Anna's crimes have been glamorized, in part by places like Netflix, that you see it as a big picture problem. Is that sort of what you are referring to? Like that sort of the big picture problem that you're describing?
Yeah, that I think specifically, I have become very mindful of the ways that our attention can be commodified. So when Anna was released from prison the first time before she was detained by ICE, I was asked to do a bunch of media appearances commenting on her release. And I declined because I was like, why would I do that? I've already written the book. It's out. I've moved on. I have no interest in sort of coming out and speaking or hypothesizing about what somebody may or may not do after jail. Like she did her time. Like all we can do is like hope that, you know, Godspeed, like I hope this doesn't happen again. But while I was declining things, I saw that she was being given various media platforms, and that would be fine if she had something productive to say, but it felt as though these different outlets were just giving her space to rationalize her behavior, to continue peddling belief in this, you know, in fictional, in my mind, like this fictional intention, you know, like I was really going to do it. I didn't mean to never pay someone back. Like all of these things that I believed for far too long and that she's now getting to sell to a broader audience. So as I was watching that, what I realized is our attention to her, our attention to people like this, our attention to things is what gives them influence and power. So when I say it's a big picture problem, I think what I'm really referring to is the attention economy and the way that we think we're watching something just without stakes, but our viewership in itself is actually something that does have a monetary value and also a value in terms of our own behavior, our beliefs, and how we move through the world.
You write about how Anna will be given these like very convivial interviews where it's clearly the interviewer was like, wow, this Anna Delvey, like, yeah. can you believe it? And they would have these buzzy headlines. And I guess part of me is like, how can you print the words of somebody who lies? If yeah. you're a journalist or a reporter, like somebody asked, like, oh, are you going to try to talk to Anna for this interview? And I was like, why would I? Why would I want to talk to somebody who lies?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a way to do it. There's actually a 60 Minutes Australia interview. It's of course still kind of sensationalized around the edges, but at least the viewer had a very firm, framing device in which he, you know, it's the same way I think the most successful interviews with someone like Donald Trump were conducted, where you have a baseline foundation of truth, fiction, you know, some degree of commonly shared right, wrong when it comes to like ethics or morality. And you actually try to hold someone to account. That's interesting. And then I think it's actually like journalism. But I think what I do find puzzling, or I understand it, but I think I find it, you know, problematic is the way that so much of our media and our news sources today are driven by, not by quality, but traffic. So places are incentivized to come up with these clickbait headlines with these really sensationalized recaps of, you know, events that in real life were interesting, but, you know, are so much more interesting if you embellish these details. And it was troubling for me because watching, like, even during the trial, the way people were reporting on what she was wearing, or like, you know, oh, she's so audacious, can you believe, like yeah, she is. That's what, you know, that's what drew me into the friendship too. Here's this person you can't quite figure out, like she's wacky, she's really confident, she's doing these things that kind of break your brain and make you sit there and stare and kind of ask questions. But that's how it works. Like while we're doing that, like no one's asking, where's the money coming from? Like what's the impact of this person's behavior, and why does it matter?
According to BBC News, which filed a Freedom of Information Act request, Netflix reportedly started paying Anna before she had ever even gone to trial. They paid $30,000, which went toward paying her lawyer.
Then, Netflix paid for the rights to adapt Anna's story into the show Inventing Anna. In total, Netflix reportedly paid Anna $320,000. Now, that money was initially frozen to give her victims a chance to sue. And even though some of her victims did file claims for a portion of those funds, whatever is left over that didn't go to paying the lawyers just goes right to Anna. And what did Anna spend that money on? Designer clothing.
You've written about the fact that Netflix paid Anna. You know, it's a little bit of one of those things where she used the money to pay legal fees. However, I would argue that they're her legal fees. And so if somebody gives me money and I'm like, oh, I use that money to pay my bills, I feel like it's a bit of a stretch to say that I'm not benefiting from that, but whatever. Do you feel that Netflix is contributing to an ecosystem where lying and scamming can be financially rewarding and financially lucrative?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this is like very cut and dry evidence of that, because they moved so quickly to option the story that they ended up paying Anna before her case even went to trial, before she even went to trial. And that's the money that was used initially to pay her criminal defense lawyer, whom she chose to pay his like a initial fees. And then beyond that, they started their writer's room the day that the trial began. There were Netflix writers in the courtroom. Her lawyer was representing her in her entertainment dealings at the same time he was representing her in a criminal trial. And I knew that at the time, which is part of why I think I went into it feeling, I mean, of course, I was also so raw and it was all so fresh and I was so emotional. Way more, you know, I wish I had like a little more distance from everything or a little more composure, but I just felt frankly so gaslighted by the fact that I was being accused of using my testimony as content for entertainment, quote unquote, because I was writing a book. While at the same time, I knew that everybody there was doing that and I actually wasn't. Like, you know, I was left $60,000 in debt. Like, I was just finding a way to like heal, to understand, to move forward. Yeah, it was really topsy-turvy. And I do think Netflix certainly not only influenced the criminal justice proceedings, but also gave this person who, you know, we can all think what we want to think, but looking on paper at her past actions, she is a convicted criminal. And they have created for her a glamorized version of her crimes, given her a platform, given her an audience, and set her up with a viewership that she can now continue to monopolize. Like, she will continue to make money on the notoriety that she achieved through committing criminal acts.
Let's take a quick break. Hey, ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It is crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us, Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or your community, your health is invaluable. Let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us and let's take care of our hearts together. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at @RailsToTrails. Y'all know I love the internet, but a sad truth about it is that it can be a scary place, especially for women, people of color, and trans folks. We've talked to people on this podcast, whistleblowers, activists, and advocates who are making technology safer, who then become targets for doing that work. But the truth is, it can happen to any of us online. That's why I personally use and recommend Delete Me. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information you don't want online and makes sure it stays off. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and use promo code NOGIRLS at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and enter code NOGIRLS at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/nogirls, code NOGIRLS. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS. And we're back. Scammers are not a new phenomena. They've always existed. But in the age of streaming services and social media, it seems like we're living in a golden age for scammers, where if your scam is flashy enough and captures our attention in just the right kind of way, what might have started as a scam can be laundered into a more legitimate platform. For instance, Netflix's The Tinder Swindler, a documentary that chronicles Simon Levev, who posed as a wealthy jet-set playboy by duping women that he met on the dating app Tinder out of thousands of dollars. Levev's con involved convincing women to loan him money through outlandish lies. And since the documentary, Levev is clearly trying to parlay the attention and notoriety from his con into a pathway of a more legitimate, not to mention lucrative, platform. So as Anna once intimated to a BBC reporter, it's kind of hard to say that crime doesn't pay, because it seems like in our current media landscape, it kind of does.
Do you think that we live in a climate where people who scam and lie, people like she was, as you said, she was convicted of this. So it's not like it's some big secret. It's not like it's you saying
right.
this. This
is exactly. You know, these are facts.
These are just the facts of what happened. I feel like we are allowing pathways to legitimize these people. And like, you know, maybe it started as a con and it started as a scam, but by the end of it, you'll have money and an audience and people who are interested to see what happens next, and that you can sort of legitimize that. Like, for instance, if you watch the Netflix documentary, The Tinder Swindler, the scammer in that case, Simon Levev,
I think.
Something like that, yeah. You know, he got this big bump in social media followers and also is making pretty good money on Cameo right now. He's charging $300 for a personal shout out and $1,400 for a business shout out. He has a manager. He's talked about wanting to do a podcast. You know, is the media creating pathways for folks to legitimize what started out as a scam or a con or a lie?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, looking back, there's actually a really interesting book about this called The Attention Merchants by this man called Tim Wu. With the rise of reality television and this model of normal person to celebrity as like a model for business, and then it evolved into social media where people it wasn't like winning the lottery. Everybody too could do this if they found a way to brand themselves, to market themselves that was compelling enough to attract attention. But as we've just realized, unless you have some kind of outlandish, loud shtick or personality, like no one is really paying attention. And I think this is like now evolved into curation, not just through digital media, but here are these people. And these people have always existed, mind you, but we live in an age where that kind of behavior is really rewarded. You know, it's not an age where it's about, you know, morality or like, which sounds so like Pollyanna-ish and hokey, but it's very much about the sort of the cult of personality and who attracts our attention. And like, obviously who we, and you know, voted our president is a testament to that.
What you just articulated is one of my biggest issues in making the show, is the way that we have our entire digital ecosystem and media ecosystem is biased toward outrageousness and lies and scams. It's been a documented thing that on social media, incorrect information travels much faster and much farther than accurate information.
There's that saying, like a lie can travel around the world while the truth is still putting on its shoes, or some variation of that, but it's very true.
Absolutely true. And so, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast about the ways that our landscapes have become this like marketplace for extremism, and who's really losing is us, the general public.
You know, there's a problem when the Weather Channel is sensationalized. Like, for the Weather Channel to be like, whoa, like, you know, and giving these like hokey names to things and like making everything seem like a doomsday event. And it's like sprinkling outside. Like, there's no news here. But they rely on viewership the same way as any other channel does. So like, for our entire economy to run based on like clicks or attention, like, that is scary. There are certain things that I think probably we all might be a little better off if there were other motivators.
We all deserve timely, thoughtful, accurate information. And so even, you know, your example of the Weather Channel, if I need to know whether or not to bring an umbrella and I turn on the weather and it's like, you know, monsoons and hurricanes and oh my God. And it's like, well, I'm being underserved because I don't know if I need to bring an umbrella when I'm going down the street, you know? And so we all lose out. We all lose when we have any kind of media ecosystem that is biased towards sensationalism or lies or scams or clicks and outrageousness rather than thoughtful, accurate, nuanced content.
And it pushes us to the extremes of either total belief or complete disbelief, because either you buy into whatever, you know, Kool-Aid you're looking for, like whether that's Fox News or, you know, some like extreme version of like CNN, like, you know, they all have their biased reporting techniques, right? But like, I think you either sort of hop on a bandwagon or you say, none of it's objective, I don't believe anything. And then that's not great either, because there are still things that should be believed. So I do agree that it is a disservice to everybody, because it creates a system in which it's really hard to tell truth from fiction.
In my day job, I do a lot of work combating conspiracy theories and things like that, and trying to understand why people fall prey to them. And a big part of it is just complete lack of trust in media institutions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big reason why. It's like, I can understand why somebody would just lose all trust in media when that is the thing that fuels it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a lot of similarity. Obviously, I mean, the stakes are just sort of, it's apples and oranges with when it comes to like someone like Anna and like masculine conspiracy theories, but there is similarity in the way that both, I guess, like lie structures or manipulation techniques rely on framing arguments in a way that makes them almost irrefutable, because they speak to these sort of like cryptic abstracts or things that you literally just can't disprove, even though they are false. It's like a flawed framing device. And I think it's really hard for people, especially if you're isolated, to keep your feet on the ground and understand what's happening if you're not familiar with that type of behavioral pattern.
After the disastrous trip to Marrakesh, Rachel was left with a $62,000 credit card bill that her credit card company eventually forgave. But before that, Rachel struggled to pay rent and took loans from loved ones to cover bills to get by. She eventually published her book about what she learned from her relationship with Anna, called My Friend Anna, and sold the rights to develop her story for television to Lena Dunham at HBO. Rachel takes a lot of criticism for, quote, profiting off of her relationship to Anna. So I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned, which is that you sometimes take criticism for the fact that you, you know, published a book about your experiences, you've written about your experiences. I interviewed Amanda Knox, the exoneree, you probably know who she is. And something that she said in that interview that I will never forget is that, you know, she's often criticized for making money, you know, writing books about what happened to her. And, you know, however, producers, filmmakers, writers, they make a lot of money retelling sometimes like a really harmful, deeply fictionalized account of something that like sort of happened around her, but like it's always like deeply, deeply fictionalized. And something that she said was that it's apparently everyone else is allowed to profit off of something that happened to me, except for me. Everybody else can make money off of my story, but me. And I guess, you know, why do you think this is? You know, I guess I should say a side note, which is that if I lost a lot of money, anybody who wanted to pay me to tell the story of what happened to me to recoup my expenses, I would absolutely say yes. And I think that most people would. But I feel that we have this expectation where victims are kind of expected to be kind of holier than thou. Meanwhile, the people who harmed them, it's like they can do whatever. They can make money however. And so I think, like, why do you think that is? Where do you think that comes from?
I mean, first of all, I do completely agree with you. It often feels like the victims are on trial more so than the criminals. And also, like, there's this odd thing that I've realized the word victim has so much packed into the connotations around the word. It's like people think as soon as you're no longer in debt or as soon as you've been made whole, no matter how hard you had to work to actually become okay, you're not a victim anymore. Like, you're now, you know, and someone who's exploiting a situation if you, you know, keep moving forward or if you're seen to succeed. And it's like, what is a victim? Like, what does a victim look like? I've had so many people reach out to me on social media to say, you don't look like a victim. And I think that is such a loaded, odd thing to say to somebody. Like, saying that you were the victim of a crime is not a request for pity. It's a request for acknowledgement of a wrong that was committed. It, you know, it is not like I'm still stuck in this like stalled state in perpetuity. It's like, this happened and that's a fact. It doesn't matter what you do afterwards to be okay, you know, to repair the damage, to find a way out of it. Like, that is really not relevant. But I think there are a lot of things that are distracting, especially when these stories get retold through the lens of media or entertainment. People tend to fixate on the whistles and bells and the flashy trips and the money. And they hold that, I think the jury did the same thing. They sort of hold that lens up and say, well, you know, looking at the net gain, you were doing this before Anna, now you're doing this, you came out okay, therefore, nope, the crime didn't happen. It's like, wait, so you're saying I was too good at, you know, finding, like, fighting tooth and nail to find a way forward? Like, therefore, it didn't happen? Like, what? Why do I think it happens? I think it's really easy for people to hold on to really simplified recaps of something that was actually very complex and nuanced. And of course, looking back, red flags look like this, like, very tidy pattern. But when you're living through something where you're dealing with a master manipulator, you know, there's time between these things that might have tipped you off to trouble ahead. There's an actual relationship between real life people, and everything is much grayer than it appears in hindsight.
Yeah, it's so funny because I feel like a lot of people I've seen, and I saw this idea of, you know, well, while that was happening, she definitely wanted to go to Morocco, or she definitely wanted this. And it's like, who gives a shit? Like, it just seems so, like, picking apart. It feels very victim blaming.
It's very convenient. And I think people want to look for a reason to explain why something bad has happened to somebody, you know, especially if it is not, like, you know, death. Like, it, you know, when it seems like someone's come out okay, then it's like, okay, we all have, like, carte blanche to just sit here and talk about why you deserved it. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, everybody wants to be understood. Like, it stinks to be misunderstood, and it stinks to have things framed in a way that's not true, especially when they're so personal. And so many people are forming opinions about you from so little information and flawed information. But at the end of the day, like, everybody looks at a story like this, which, you know, is not a new story. It's like a tale as old as time. It's just in a modern iteration of it. But people look at it and they project their understanding, like, they come away with an understanding of it based on their own life experiences. And it's important for people to think, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Or, you know, don't get sucked into materialism. Or, like, you know, everybody looks at it and thinks these things, but I think that's actually more telling of their own life experiences than it is necessarily of mine. Like, have I asked myself those questions? Of course I have. Like, if I hadn't, I think, you know, it's really important to look at. That's why I wrote a I wrote what turned into the book, but it was so that I could frame, you know, piece together this like narrative of experience that I lived through, look at it, try to like dig into it, understand what happened, what to make of it, like why it happened, and how to learn, heal, and move forward.
Something that you said people want an explanation for why this happened to you. I think what they're actually looking for is an explanation for why this would never happen to them.
Totally.
I think it's about them.
Right. And I mean, absolutely, as they don't even know me. And like, they're, even if someone did meet me through this experience, this is something that happened. It was a friendship. I knew her for a year. We were close friends for about 3 months, three brief months. Like, she never bought me clothes. She never bought me shoes. She never bought, like, did I work out with her? Yes. Did she pay for some dinners? Yes. Did she invite me on this crazy vacation? 100%. But to say that anybody understands someone else's entire values, like value system and personality and character through like a few months of what is a, you know, 30 some odd year life with so many more important, like, and like, I don't know, telling things, but it's just, life is weird, huh?
Life is weird. I kind of say, I love, this is kind of a side note, I love your perspective on this. I feel like if this happened to me, I guess, you know, you were saying earlier how people don't really see the work involved in getting you to a place where you're like, oh, this is behind me. I'm speaking about it now, not because I want to relitigate what happened, the minutiae of our relationship, but because I want to ask these, like, thoughtful questions about what it says about our culture and all of that. You really strike me as someone who is like, you know, I know we don't see that work, but where you are today, it just seems like I really appreciate your perspective of where you're at right now.
I really appreciate you like acknowledging or understanding that, because it's very hard, you know, I guess being a photo producer is much the same way. It's like, if you're doing it well, nobody pays attention to how it happened or why it's happening in this way. But like, it's irritating, except that like, there's nothing I can do. People who want to be wrong are just going to be wrong. But like, when people are like, oh, you just want the spotlight, or oh, you just want attention, it's like, I have turned down so many more things than I have said yes to. Like, this is a spotlight that I did not want. You know, I have done the best I could with something that was very negative, and I've done the best I could to make it into something positive, not just for myself, but ideally for others who may have gone through the same thing, or to prevent others from going through the same thing. But you're like, thank you. You're completely right. What, like, my very specific and clear objective as to why I'm still talking today it really is about this spotlight that I didn't want. And I thought very hard about whether or not to just sort of like lie low, not comment when the Netflix thing came out, like just like not say anything at all. But I recognize the value of attention, and I recognize the fact that whether or not I choose to engage with it, there would be this attention coming my way. And it felt like there are so many really important causes in the world that need attention. There are so many important issues, even relating to this specifically, that can't get people to pay attention to them. So I really wanted to like yield the time towards asking questions. And then ideally, I mean, like finding people like you or you know, finding a way to sort of redirect the spotlight towards activation partners who can speak to these issues in a thoughtful way and make people think a little harder or differently about something that on the surface just seems so sort of frivolous.
Our attention has value, and it's also, we only have so much of it. And so mm-hmm. when lies and outrageousness are amplified to get our attention, what's not getting our attention? What important issues are just going overlooked because of
exactly.
that?
Exactly. And that's, I think that's so right. It's like, you know, do I watch bad TV? Of course I do. Do I eat junk food? Of course I do. Like, it's not to say don't do it. It's just to be mindful that if that's all you do, like, that really will inform the health of your life. Like, you know, when you are paying attention to these things that are designed to suck up your attention, that are designed to make you want more of them, they're addicting. You are not paying attention to something else. You are not, you know, necessarily having the autonomy you may think you have over the direction of your, you know, purpose.
I definitely know what you mean.
More after a quick break.
Hey, ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It is crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us, Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or your community, your health is invaluable. Let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us and let's take care of our hearts together. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I know firsthand that navigating our connected digital lives also comes with navigating all kinds of complicated issues. Like, for instance, what do you do if you were going through a depressive episode and completely stopped answering emails? What's the etiquette around logging back on and replying to them super late? Or is it okay to not accept your boss or coworker's friend request on social media? Now, on There Are No Girls on the Internet's all-new newsletter, not only can you get more internet insights, but we will be weighing in answering your internet questions and conundrums. So subscribe to There Are No Girls on the Internet's newsletter at tangodi.com/newsletter. And if you want to support the podcast, thank you so much. Check out our online store at tangodi.com/store. Let's get right back into it. So you can probably tell that I did not really enjoy the Netflix show Inventing Anna. And one of my biggest issues with it is the way that it frames Anna's crimes with a kind of girl boss hustle mentality. That she came to this country as an immigrant with nothing, and that if she did maybe do a little lying and scamming here or there, it was only in pursuit of building something that she truly believed in. After all, isn't that the American dream? Over on another scammer story, Hulu's The Dropout, which chronicles the story of Elizabeth Holmes, former CEO of Theranos, a blood testing company that turned out to be a total scam, actually does a pretty good job of showing how empty, not to mention dangerous, it can be when scamming and lying is rebranded as vision or leadership.
One of the questions I did have for you is that the Inventing Anna show does this, but I've also seen it kind of glimmers of it in other scammers and just sort of in media in general. This idea of like scamming and lying kind of being rebranded as hustling or trying to achieve the American dream or worse, girl bossing. I completely like logistically understand why that's how it's framed or why it's how it's reframed, but it's such an easy narrative. But I think it's kind of harmful to reframe stealing from people and lying from people as hustling and girl bossing and leadership. And I guess my question is, like, what are your thoughts about that? Have you seen this and what do you think about it?
Yeah, I think it's lazy. I think it's lazy. And I do think it does do damage to the reality. It's so backwards to attempt to make something about like classism, racism, sexism, and then to frame it in a way that is promoting someone who couldn't care less about those issues unless they're serving their own agenda. Like, that is such a disservice to people who are actually working to explore and explore these issues and create positive change in ways that are actually meaningful and substantive, especially in the past, I don't even know how many years, I guess like 10 years or so, maybe less, like these sort of catch-all buzzwords like feminism or like, good grief. There's a performative activism that features words that have become trendy and like missions that have become trendy. And I think shows like this have kind of glommed on to that.
I told you I watched the finale of the show on Hulu, The Dropout, about Elizabeth Holmes, the Theranos scam lady. There was a time in feminism where a woman making money, that was feminism. I do think there's a kind of, it's a sort of era of feminism I'm not proud of, where, yeah, if you were just a woman who was out for herself and making money,
yeah,
that was seen as like a feminist win. And we didn't really ask a lot of questions about, are you harming people? Yeah. Are you, we didn't really ask a lot of questions. And I think that I kind of see this era kind of maybe coming to a close, I hope. But I think that era really allowed for women to be lauded as feminist icons for doing things that actually hurt other people at their own expense.
I don't think the answer to chauvinism is a form of feminism that mirrors the same thing, like that reverses that negative way of being. Like, I do think sometimes pendulums swing too far before they kind of find their middle. And it seems like that's what happened. It's like, well, you did this for so long, therefore, like, it's my time to do it. And we should celebrate the fact that I'm doing it. I think it's hard sometimes to see that when you're in it and when it's a reaction rather than it's reactive rather than proactive, right? So it's like finding a way to exist as a woman in reaction to what men have done wrong rather than just finding a way to exist as a woman. I don't have solutions, but I see the trend as well. And
yeah,
I guess one thing related to the Hulu show, but I think that show actually strikes me as, I mean, obviously what she did does not strike me as something that was done well, but the show I thought did a good job actually of dramatizing real life events because they framed her in a way that felt very true to the actual sequencing of what happened. Like I read Bad Blood by John Carreyrou and it felt like it, you know, it followed a fact pattern, and it framed her not as someone that everybody was, I mean, you saw how she was celebrated, but that was true to the way that it happened in real life. It was very true to the mixed reactions she received. And I thought Amanda Seyfried did an amazing job of not of like gleefully sort of relishing the shtick of the con, but just in framing this sort of very misguided, probably like psychologically unhealthy person who like just kind of lacked a certain like humanship that allowed her to understand the importance of her decision making on real lives. It just was such a foil for me when I watched that versus what I had seen in Inventing Anna, which really just looked like something that had been made by people who really bought into what Anna was selling.
Oh my gosh. I am happy to hear you say this. I felt the exact, first of all, Inventing Anna, all of the issues that you brought up with it, yes, but also just like, was a slog to watch. Like, yeah. I wanted to watch it before I talked to you. And literally my partner was like, I feel like you've been watching this show for a decade. And I was like, you and me both. Which just like wasn't an entertaining show. And I guess having I felt The Dropout was different because it had empathy for the people who were harmed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you saw these people who were, you know, had cancer and were involved in these blood trials. You know, it had empathy for the whistleblowers who risked so much of their selves to come forward. I felt like it was a show that managed to demonstrate the kind of seductive, you know, cult of personality around a scammer without falling prey to it. Absolutely. And Inventing Anna was exactly the opposite.
It was done so thoughtfully. It had such depth to it because, yeah, of course there were people who like hopped on the bandwagon and celebrated her. Like, it was just the full range of people who were made to read like real life people. You know, I think Inventing Anna flattened everybody. And there's a way that can be done in like a show like Gossip Girl, or a show that is meant to be, and in some ways I guess this is, but meant to be about materialism and superficiality. But to reduce something like this, where real crimes were committed, real people's lives were impacted, it wasn't just these like faceless things. There are people who lose jobs. There are people who obviously, or not obviously, if it were obvious, that wouldn't be a problem. But there are people who weren't included in the court case. She definitely committed so many offenses that harmed real life people. So I think to flatten something like that into this like very frivolous, like fun, glossy slog of a TV show. Full stop. I don't know. ..
Yeah. I mean, it's, there were times where I was like, are you meant to be rooting for Anna in this show? And then I think the richest part is at the end, where the biggest crime the show seems to suggest has been committed is the character that shares your same name. she's like Neff is like, you're a bad friend. And it's like, well, Anna went to jail. Like, come on.
Like, I know. I mean, and people really believe all that as fact. Like, people are like, she bankrolled you for 2 years. And like, I know better than to feed the trolls on the internet. Like, it's not my job to like educate people about the truth is out there if anybody wants to look for it. But like, I didn't even know her that long. She did not bankroll. Like, but yeah, so to have it framed as though, like, where's the loyalty? It's like, this is someone... we were not best friends. I knew her for, and also look what she did. Look at the pattern of her behavior. At what point, why are you suggesting people who are in these like manipulative relationships, be they friendships or whatever, like that they are doing something wrong by choosing to leave something that is so harmful? Like, that's bizarre. That's a very bizarre thing to say. Also, the show rearranged it as though I had been reimbursed before the trial and that I like kept the secret of my involvement with her arrest, or kept that a secret. Like, didn't happen. I was protected 2 years after Marrakesh, after the trial concluded. I didn't keep my involvement in the sting some kind of like grand secret. I wasn't ashamed of it, but I wasn't that close with like Neff or Casey. I like them. I have nothing negative to say. It's like, fine. Everybody can look back and see things through their lenses, and that's, you know, it is what it is. But we weren't in touch. It's not like I owed people explanations. I was out more than I made any. They were not left in any kind of like debt, or like there was no ongoing relationship there. So to suggest that by not reaching out to say hello, like this is what I have done, and like it, like that's just weird. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I think people understand the way these relationships and acquaintanceships work in their own lives, and it's like, of course that would be like you wouldn't owe these people anything, or you wouldn't owe, like, you know, but when it's someone else and that the minutiae of those relationships are like projected for everyone to pick apart, suddenly it's like, oh, well, why would she do this? Doesn't she have loyalty? And it's like, well, calm down. Think about how this would actually go down if it was you. Like, we all understand it in our own lives, but when it's somebody else, I think it's like different.
Yeah, evidently. And I understand people don't tune into shows like this to really think very analytically. It's mostly about just getting a good laugh at other people's expense. And like, I do too. It's fine. Like, I certainly can't like hate on people for being human. Like, that's how this works. I think that the frivolity of it does conceal something that is a bigger picture problem, as I have said, which is why I figure if I'm stuck in this like dumpster fire anyway, I might as well try and like send up a smoke signal about, you know, red flags that I know a little too well from firsthand experience.
Yeah. Speaking of your firsthand experience, one of the last questions I have is like, what has it just been like for you, Rachel, the person going through this, getting the social media trolls, getting people who have maybe been misled about what happened from the television show? What has it been like to deal with that online?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not easy, but I'm mindful of my privilege and my luck just to have like such supportive family and friends, to have an awareness of exactly what it is that is happening. You know, part of it I learned the hard way just through gaslighting with Anna to begin with. And now through what I've learned in looking back at what happened, looking, you know, at like, I guess, I mean, writing the book helped me a lot just in terms of sort of looking at the pattern of behavior as a pattern rather than like this. When you're in a relationship like that, it's really hard to see anything as black and white, because it's not. Life is gray. But looking back, things seem so much clearer to me. So I'm grateful to have had people who believe me, who like a platform to speak from, the opportunity to speak. Which all that is to say, it's hard. But part of the reason I'm speaking up about it is because I think that the structure of the Netflix show or this broader pattern that's happening, it does a disservice to people who don't have that ability to understand what's happening to them, who might not get to hear stories like this because people are ashamed or they're scared of the victim blaming, which is completely fair. It's wild. And it, you know, I can have my feet on the ground and my head on my shoulders. And if I sit there and read that for longer than maybe like 10 minutes, like it, even if you know that it, you know, it's actually not about you, it doesn't feel good to have that kind of energy coming, like, I mean, that sounds so woo-woo, but like that kind of hostility coming at you, like it's like death by paper cuts. Like you can be the strongest rock in the water, but like if it keeps running, like you're gonna get worn down. So it's hard, but I recognize that it's harder, so much harder for so many other people. And the internet can be pretty nasty.
We've talked a lot about how the dangers that come when we willingly give our attention away to liars and scammers and people who are outrageous and extreme. Do you ever see a situation where things like nuance, thoughtfulness, honest, accurate content will be amplified over that kind of extremism and lies? Do you think that this is just it forever, or do you see a change coming?
I mean, as evidenced by past behavior, I am kind of a willful optimist through and through, and that is just who I am. So I always hope for that, you know. I do think the damage done by what you just said, like the pattern, what I'm trying to say is the truth will out. And it's one thing to think the pattern of celebrating these individuals does do harm that is and will be visible until there is a movement in the opposite direction. So I think we've already seen that, like from like Me Too forward, where people are starting to pay attention to things in a different way and actually attempt to hold outlets and individuals to account. I just think it's in very specific arenas thus far that that seems to be happening. And I think people like to sort of pretend that things they do for entertainment don't touch on the same subjects or don't have the same impact or seriousness. And that to me is that's the slippery slope. I hope that people will recognize these things are not separate. They're inextricably linked to the way that we as a culture celebrate people and form our beliefs.
That's really smart.
Got a story about an interesting thing in tech or just want to say hi? You can reach us at hello@tangodi.com. You can also find transcripts for today's episode at tangodi.com. There Are No Girls on the Internet was created by me, Bridget Todd. It's a production of iHeartRadio and Unbossed Creative. Jonathan Strickland is our executive producer. Tari Harrison is our producer and sound engineer. Michael Amato is our contributing producer. I'm your host, Bridget Todd. If you want to help us grow, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheChi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.